I'd like for you to turn to Job chapter 38. While you're turning to that, let me mention to you that Mark and Vicki Barber are with us. Mark has been a member, having placed membership here for some time ago, Mark and Vicki were married weekend, I guess, of last week now. And Vicki wishes to be a part of our work, and some of you may not know who they are. I'd like to ask Mark and Vicki to stand in the back. They moved up on me. They were near the back seat when that. I told Mark I could describe him, that I could just say one of the biggest, ugliest fellas here, and he said next to Ben Flatt. So we're glad to have Mark and Vicki. You know, one of the pleasures that I have in the work here is being able to associate and work with young people like Mark and Vicki. I counted it an honor to be asked to perform their marriage ceremony. And young couples like this, coming to a setting of a Christian education like Fried Hardeman, Mark's from Union City, Vicki's from Lawrenceburg, meeting here, beginning their home together, being associated with us in the work. I think it's this type of development that is worth so much in the setting where we are here at Henderson and in the work with Fried Hardeman. As you might imagine, we're still in the clouds. Tonight is the 10th lesson in which we've talked about clouds, and I have at least five more planned. As I've indicated to you, these lessons are not intended to be on the same subject. We're simply using the word cloud as it's used in the Bible and in other ways to suggest lessons that are of what we believe to be of practical use to us. I'm hesitant to really try to describe some of the things that we'll be talking about tonight because they're in a setting where Job admitted to God that he did not understand some of these things. You are aware, I'm sure, of the story of Job and his suffering and how he began to wonder why he was suffering in so many ways, and maybe began to doubt or question, in a sense, though he never turned against God, he at least questioned why these things were happening. And in the 37th, 38th, 39th, and 40th, and 41st chapters, particularly of the book of Job, God answers Job. And he answers him mainly with a series of questions and says, Job, where were you when these things happened? And if you're going to try to make the decisions, you need to stop and consider some of these things. And after he had said all of these things, over in the 40th chapter, we find Job saying in verses 4 and 5 of chapter 40, Behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay mine hand upon my mouth. Once I have spoken, but I will not answer, yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. Job was admitting the greatness of God and how difficult it is for man to understand how God acts. And yet I believe looking at some of these questions and looking at them in light of what we do know, and admitting there are some things that we do not know about the power of God, can be helpful to us. Three times in the 38th chapter of Job, we find the use of the word cloud. In verse 9, when I made the cloud, the garment thereof, and thick darkness, a swaddling band for it. In verse 34, canst thou lift up thy voice to the clouds, that abundance of water may cover thee? And verse 37, who can number the clouds in wisdom, or who can stay the bottles of heaven? The first of these references in verse 9 may be referring to the situation during the time of creation, when God separated the waters above the firmament from the waters below the firmament, because he's talking about it in connection with the seas and the cloud being the garment of that. Or he may very well be talking about it in the sense of the cloud and the sea being related in somewhat the same way that he's talking in verses 25 and 26. Who hath divided a water course for the overflowing of waters, or a way for the lightning of thunder, to cause it to rain on the earth where no man is, on the wilderness where there is no man? Talking about the process of rain and the process of evaporation going from here to here and here back to here. He may be using cloud there in verse 9 in that sense. But at least he's using it to deal with the laws of nature. And then when we get down to verses 34 and 37, there's little question about what he is discussing there. He is basically saying with the questions. In verses 34 and 37, Job, you need to realize that you cannot alter the course of a cloud. That's something that only God can do. Even when Elijah prayed that it might not rain and then prayed again that it might rain, Elijah was not altering the course of the cloud or the course of nature. He was praying to God who had the power to alter it and did alter the course of nature on several occasions, particularly on the occasion of the birth of Jesus Christ, to bring Christ into this world without using the completeness of his set of laws of nature dealing with the system of reproduction. But he is definitely saying to Job here, you need to realize that you as a man do not have the power to control what goes on with the clouds. Now this is emphasized even more to us as we begin to look at some other things that are in this chapter. Go back with me to verse 3. Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. He's saying, Job, you listen to what I have to say, and you think about what I'm going to say. Of course, we know that Job couldn't answer him as far as these questions were concerned. Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest? Or who hath stretched the line upon it? Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? Or who laid the cornerstone thereof? He's saying, Job, who created this earth on which we're living? Who brought it into existence and put it into movement as it now is? He might be referring to the equator, or he might be referring to what we have come in science to call the axis of the earth when he's talking about these lines. But whatever God has in mind there, and even Job could not delve into the mind of God to know exactly what he had in mind, he was saying, Job, you need to stop and consider that I'm the one in charge of this earth. And I'm the one that made the decisions about its creation, and I'm the one who made the decisions about the laws that govern its actions. Where were you when all this happened? Whom do you think you are, or who do you think you are, to even claim to be able to answer any of these questions relative to its action? Job, what about the measures of it, and how it's put together, and how it works? And of course, we realize that Job could not answer that. It's rather interesting to go ahead in the chapter, and we cannot touch all of the questions, but let's just look at a few of them. Notice he talks about the seas with their doors and how that these came about and how the water course relative to them is controlled. Have you ever wondered when you think about all the water that falls and all of the United States, for example, and how this goes into the rivers and then the rivers into the seas? Why do the seas not become too full? Why do we not have the sea shore taken out as the water would move up on it as it becomes fuller and fuller? How about all of this action and interaction as far as the water course is concerned? He's saying, Job, can you answer all of these things and explain how these things have taken place? A little bit later at verse 9, he says, when I made the cloud, the garment, goes ahead and talks about this and break up the creed place and set bars and doors. And then he talks about the morning. Look at verse 12. Hast thou commanded the morning since thy days and caused the day spring to know his place? How is it that the sun arises? Of course, we know that this is a figurative way of saying the earth is moving, but we talk about the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. How is it that even our local television, which doesn't always get everything exactly right, is able to report the weathermen who don't always get everything exactly right and tell us that the sun will be up in the morning unless it's cloudy at a certain minute, and it will set tomorrow night at a certain minute. This has been going on longer than we even have history written. And even those who claim to be evolutionists and who do not believe that God brought all of this into existence must admit that there's a day and there's a night. We're going to have sunshine and we're going to have darkness. He says, Job, how in the world are you going to be able to explain these things? Then he comes down to verse 17 and he says, have the gates of death been opened unto thee? Hast thou seen the doors of the shadow of death? Oh, we have made so many strides in medicine. in discoveries relative to it. We're able to cure things now that were certainly not curable years ago. The average lifespan of a person is longer now than it was. Look at all that we've been able to do. And yet we still haven't been able to control death. There are those who are trying to control it. It brings on another subject that perhaps we need to look at before long, the subject of euthanasia and some things that are happening relative to that. And even in cases where some were raised from the dead, look at Lazarus and people like that. They did not even come back and tell us what's on the other side. God says, Job, remember, I'm the one in charge of this. And Hebrews 9:27 says, it's appointed unto man once to die, and after that the judgment. Look at verse 9. Where is the way where light dwelleth? And as for darkness, where is the place thereof? You might just notice that that's scientifically accurate, though the Bible was not intended to be a science book or a scientific book. Because light, he says, the way of light, that's movement, the place of darkness. Darkness is the absence of light and is literally a place. And then he goes ahead and says in verse 24, by what way is the light parted, which scattereth the east wind upon the earth? Can you explain these laws of nature? Well, we've learned to deal with them and to know how they act, but why do they act that way? God says, Job, you can't answer that. Then down at verse 35, canst thou send lightnings that they may go and say unto thee, here we are? Some think that's a prediction of television and telephone rays. I don't want to go that far. But he at least talks about lightnings, and these lightnings, whatever they are, they're going to say something when they get there. He says, Job, can you deal with these rays and these waves of sound and light or whatever he's talking about there, these that have to do with the laws of nature? And again, Job could not answer. And then in verses 7, 31, and 33, he talks about the stars. He even talks about some of the constellations that had been named at the time that this was written. And he asked Job about them. And then he says, can you even number the stars? Look at what we've learned, even in the lifetime of those of us that are gathered here tonight, about how many stars there are and how many more there are than man first thought, and how many more discovered, the larger the telescope and means of looking out into the universe. God is saying to Job, Job, you'd better stop and think about the laws of nature and the God that's in control of them. Perhaps in the last few verses of this chapter, verses 39 through 41, he's talking about the instinct of animals and how they're able to go about their activities without ever going to school to learn how to do those things. Going about their activities that are basically the same today that they were 100 years ago. Activities that are involved to the extent that we can even make charts about how long it takes for each animal to reproduce. And we can even predict almost to the day and hour when salmon, for example, will come back to a certain place for spawning. Look at all of this, he says, Job, and you need to stop and think about how great the laws of nature are and how great the God who's in control is. I think in a very special way, we need to be reminded of that today. And I'd like to remind us of that, having emphasized that we cannot control the clouds, we cannot control these laws of nature. I'd like to emphasize something that is mentioned in verse 36 of this chapter. Who hath put wisdom in the inward parts? Or who hath given understanding to the heart? Now I realize that the words that are translated in that verse are not clear in the original Hebrew, and several things have been included in the translation in different translations to the extent of even bringing in the idea of the rooster knowing when to crow. But look at it, at least one possibility of the translation is what we have here in this one. And at least it gives us an idea that we want to consider tonight, and we'll see in other passages. Who hath put wisdom in the inward parts? You know, I have a heart that's been beating in my body all day. I did not tell it to beat. I haven't done anything since I got up this morning to help that heart to beat. It's just been beating, and it's been beating there for a long time. I have a circulatory system in my body. that has been working according to God's laws of nature now for a little bit over half a century. I don't even understand a lot about it. Even as I read what the heart specialists tell me, my understanding of it is still quite limited. But I have something in my inward parts that's operating and continuing to go because I was created by a Heavenly Father who set up some laws of nature and set those laws into existence to work. I have a digestive system in my body, and I use it quite a bit. And I understand somewhat about it, but you know, I haven't even told my digestive system to work today. I've tried to give it reason to work, but I haven't said a thing to it. It's there in my body. It's working according to God's laws of nature. I have a reproductive system in my body that God put there when I began. And it continues to work as the one does in your body, according to God's laws of nature that He put into existence long ago. And folks, here is the point that I want us to get tonight, and the reason for everything else that I have said so far. If you and I can understand that we cannot control the course of a cloud and either make it rain or keep it from raining, we need to understand that we cannot control the consequences and the course of the laws of nature that have to deal with the human body. And it's high time that we awaken to that. The events that have taken place in the last few days, particularly with Magic Johnson, and all that has been said on almost every newscast and in every newspaper, has called this to our attention again. If I had been picking an all-star team of all times, those who had played in the NBA, I think Magic Johnson would have been on my team. I think he's one of the greatest basketball players that ever played. Especially if I were picking an all-star team of NBA players, taking into consideration both their talent and their personality, I know he would have been one of the five. No question, he has one of the best personalities. He's a people person, a person who reaches out, and I think a person who literally cares about others and is concerned about others. And if I were in the president's position today to pick someone to be on the national commission or whatever it's called dealing with the problem of AIDS, I might very well pick Magic Johnson, because he may be able to do some things that will be helpful. And I certainly hope that he does. And if I were going to listen to what he says about the seriousness of this disease and the problem that exists, I would underscore it and I would ditto everything that he says. And yet Magic Johnson, who will be set up in the minds of many of our own young people in the church as a hero, has made two of the dumbest statements in the last 2 weeks that anybody's made. Number one, he has admitted that he has obtained this HIV virus through what I believe we can without contradiction call promiscuous heterosexual relationships. One of the best articles that I've ever read in a newspaper appeared in the Commercial Appeal on Monday of this last week, written by one Cal Thomas, and my understanding is that Mr. Thomas is of the Catholic faith, which he entitled, "Magic Has the Wrong Message." And in the first paragraph, he indicated that Wilt Chamberlain claims to have been involved with 20,000 different women, and that Magic Johnson has admitted being involved with some. And I listened to a television program this week in which it was a quote was given that he had admitted and had made this statement that throughout his basketball career, he had never lacked for many women as companions in every city where he had been. Now, that's an admission of living a type of life that is asking for the problem, because God's laws of nature work. And now here is what he says he's going to do. That he's going to spend the rest of his life encouraging young people to be involved. Listen, this is not what he said in words, but it's what he means. Being involved in safer sin. That's exactly what he said. He said, I'm going to spend the rest of my life encouraging young people to learn how to be intimately involved in the safest way possible. Not learn to respect the laws of nature. Not learn to respect the moral laws that are given to us in God's Word. But I'm going to tell them how they can go ahead and do what they want to and make the choices they want to. And not have to worry as much, at least try to avoid the problems that are there. My heart bleeds. I hurt for anybody who is affected by this terrible disease. But folks, so long as we continue to have people who are set up as heroes who are promoting activities that have brought about this disease, we're going to continue to have problems. It is apparent, the proof is there, that the extent of the problem has been brought about more by homosexual activities than any other type. And Magic Johnson seems to be pleased that he could say, I was not involved in that kind of activity. My activities were heterosexual. But how many of the heterosexual people involved with him had been involved in other types of relationships? Folks, if people had done what God says and respected the laws of the human body, the laws of nature that have to do with the human body, which involve the spreading of disease and many other related problems, we would not be facing the problem that we're facing tonight. And let me tell you, we're facing a problem. In something that came across my desk just this last week that's in the American Family Association Journal, it is estimated that in this year we will lose between 37,000 and 45,000 people through death related to AIDS. We will lose 760,000 with heart disease. That is about 16 or 17 times as much. And yet during this year we will spend $1,950,000,000 on the problem of AIDS and $708 million, about a third, on the problem of heart disease in our country. And in this list there's cancer, heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, diseases that are not brought about mainly by promiscuous action. And every one of them, with more deaths than that of AIDS, is having less spent, many times millions and millions less spent. That's where the problem is in our country today. And I'll tell you what really bothers me more than anything that I've said tonight is to hear young people who claim to be Christians and older people who claim to be Christians joking about it. It's not a joke. And when God's Word says, thou shalt not commit adultery, young people, that ain't no joke. And it ought not to be joked about. I think you know that I enjoy telling a joke about as much as anybody. Sometimes I think if I knew as many scriptures as I do jokes, I'd be a better preacher. But you think back. Have you ever heard me tell a joke about people being involved sexually who had no business being involved with each other? Have you ever heard me tell a joke about the preacher being in the closet or somebody else being in the closet at somebody's house? It's not a joking matter. It is a serious matter. And it is high time that we emphasize to our younger people and to college age and to those of us that are adults that we need to start listening to godly parents and godly teachers and preachers and teachers in our Bible classes who love the souls of men, who are teaching what the Bible says about moral principles and God's laws of nature, instead of listening to some sports figure or some movie actor. God's laws of nature must be respected. Back some time ago, was it a couple years ago, tornado came across Chickasaw Park out here. We saw the evidence of it. Why didn't some of you go get you a little shield of some sort and go out there and stand in front of that tornado and say, I'll stop it? It makes about as much sense as thinking we can stop God's laws of nature in other ways. This last summer, we've had a tremendous drought. Our farmers have suffered. Why don't we have people out there controlling the clouds to make it rain, or if there's a flood, to stop it from raining? Oh, we understand we're not big enough to do that. The same God that made the laws of nature that control the course of the cloud made the laws of nature that control the course of the human being. He made both of them. And it's time we respected him and what he's done and what he says. Who can alter the course of the cloud? Only God. I can't alter it. Who can alter the course of God's laws of nature as they apply to human relationships? We need to be careful thinking we can. God is still in charge. I've heard those who have tried to say and even prove that the problem with AIDS in this country and throughout the world is a plague that God is bringing on mankind because of sin. I don't believe that. I think if that were the case, we would have had a worse plague dealing with abortion a long time ago. But I do believe that it's exactly the same principle that's set up in Exodus 20. God said, I'm a jealous God, visiting the iniquities of the fathers on the third and fourth generation. God was saying there are certain laws that exist. And if you don't respect those laws and you violate those laws, not only are you going to suffer the consequences, but these consequences will be visited upon generations to come. Isn't that happening today? To where innocent unborn babies are suffering because of the decisions to be involved in immorality by their parents? We need to realize that whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he reap. Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8. And we've got to get back to teaching and teaching what is right and teaching what will happen. God made this body. My body is a part of his creation. Your body is a part of his creation. We live and move as beings of God within the boundaries of his laws of nature. And for us as Christians, there's the moral law which is associated with it. We must awaken. And this is only one of the problems that we've discussed tonight. I want to do a little more research and talk about something else in the days to come. I was told the other day by one who had listened to a certain program on television that they're saying now, young people, listen to this, that if you take crack cocaine once, you're probably going to be hooked because of the makeup of the body and what's involved in it. We're dealing with bombs. We're dealing with dynamite. We're dealing with that can wreck our families. We're dealing with that can wreck a nation. We're dealing with that can cause us to lose our souls. And what we've got to do is to get back and respect the one who can control the course of the clouds and who is still in control as far as his laws of nature are concerned. And we've got to get our people in sports or wherever it is, and those that have an opportunity, and a man like Magic Johnson has an opportunity to persuade so many people, and he can do so much good, and I pray that he will do some good. We've got to get people coming back to those things that matter and basing on God's principles relative to his laws of nature and relative to his moral laws, because it makes just as much sense for us to think that we can control the clouds as it does to think we can control our own destinies separate and apart from respect for God's laws of nature. I beg of you to prayerfully consider these things. And again, I emphasize to you that I consider it to be a very serious thing. And yet, let me close on a positive note. With all that's happening that's bad, and all the diseases that are there, and all the things that can happen to you, if we will get back to respecting what God said about purity and decency, we can still have happy relationships and happy homes in the setting where God put it. God has made His laws of nature such that they can serve us.